Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Sunday night for your Monday delivery. Excited to talk to you for the next hour or so as we discuss the latest in mixed martial arts, including the two shows that took place this past weekend in Hawaii, Bellator 294 and 295, back-to-back nights. And, of course, the UFC's Fight Night event that took place here in Las Vegas on Saturday. It was Fight Night, Pavlovich versus Blades. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Garcia versus Davis in boxing. And, of course, BKFC, they not only had a fight card less notable than the one that is coming up on this weekend, but still, they contributed as well. It was really quite the sports package for combat sports and sports fans in general, because these first rounds of NBA and NHL are right there. Your daily dose of MLB. Ever since I went to NASCAR, I'm kind of tuning in there a little bit as well. Manchester United is headed to Wembley on June 3rd for the FA Cup Final. I haven't gotten much sleep. Goes had a massive headache. But guess what, man? We're ready to rock and roll. We'll start it all off, and we're going to get through all of this. All right, guys. So, this was quite the weekend, wasn't it? I mean, I'm glad we have all these TVs in the house between upstairs, downstairs, streaming services, satellite, laptops. I mean, we were changing channels, taping stuff over and over and rewind. It was nuts, man. And I guess we're just going to go in order and start with Friday night, Bellator 294. But just real quick, I mean, is your head still spinning?
Dude, like I was so drained today because you have to remember, like, we're normal guys. So on top of two Bellator cards, a UFC card, you know, we grew up watching boxing, so we tuned into that. Now you throw in Manchester United, throw in the Lakers, throw in the Vegas Golden Knights. And on top of that, just little things that kind of catch your eyes, like Lee Murray's documentary, like the thing that Matt and Nolan worked on over there with Yancy Medeiros. Like, it was just nonstop. And that's just, like, you know, sports wise. Then you got your other duties, you know, you have a girlfriend, or you have a mom, a dad, all that stuff. Throw that in, eating. It was just fucking, it was nonstop, man.
Poor Yogi's taking the brunt of it too. He needs to get walked a little bit more. We just haven't been able to break away. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm battling the Bell's palsy. And then obviously we got our mom in town. So Goz is kind of overseeing all that. But Yogi's going to get his tomorrow. I think he's going to the Hound House. But listen, let's get into it. This past weekend, lots to unpack. And we're just going to go in order. We're going to blast through some of this. Some of this just doesn't pop like some of the other stuff. But in order is probably the easiest. Bellator 294 took place on Friday night. Somehow Bellator's made it to Hawaii. I'm not sure why Dana White threw in the towel so quick. He just made it sound the other day like, we just ain't going. Go to an arena, man. Are you that fixated on the damn stadium? Or I don't know. I've been to Hawaii a few times. Five, if I'm not mistaken. And yes, you do get your daily dose of rain, but so does the UK, and they pulled out stadium shows for boxing. So not sure what this cat's talking about, because Bellator looked like it was fun, man. Those big presence of military and just hardcore Hawaiian fans that love to watch their men and women scrap. And so Friday night, we had let me see. Here's some fighters that had wins that you're familiar with. Terrell Fortune, he got himself a W. It was a disqualification because he got punched in the back of the head quite a few times. So even though he was out when they reviewed it, he's the one that got his hand raised. Danny Sabatello in the win column, he submitted Marcos Breno. Sarah McMahon, she won a decision over Arlene Blanco. She said she wants Chris Cyborg, but she ain't going to wait around forever, meaning she's not going to retire. She says, I just want another fight. I'd love to have it be Cyborg for the title, but if not, I just want another fight. First time at 145, she said she felt great. Tim Johnson defeated Saeed Soma in the co-main event, and big win for him. And then he's, by the way, he's National Guard, or I believe, if I'm not mistaken, or reserves. I'm not sure, but I know there's a military tie, and the audience really popped to him. Plus, he had a viewing party in his home state of Arizona as well. So happy for Tim. Nice guy, always at the gym. Liz Carmouche defends her belt against Deanna Bennett. Goes. This was not going her way. And in the fourth round, it finally did. Towards the end of round four, she got the arm triangle choke over Deanna Bennett. But boy, did she have her hands full. Now, that said, prior to, Deanna Bennett missed weight by like a pound, if I'm not mistaken. It really ticked Liz Carmouche off. Technically, it's not, I guess, a title defense because the opponent didn't make weight, but she did keep her title. She would have lost the title if Deanna Bennett would have won. Deanna Bennett would not have been the champion. So it kind of sucks that you would lose your title, but at the same time, it doesn't count as a title defense. I know I just said a lot, but anyway, start at the top, Carmouche versus Bennett.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, it was kind of weird circumstances going into the fight because you hear Bennett kind of talk about how important losing that first one was and how important it was to kind of get that back and to just kind of start off on that horrible foot of not making weight. That part really, really sucks, you know, especially not only is it a big stage in Bellator, but it's a big stage when they go to Hawaii, and you just can't have those kind of mishaps. And what it does to the promotion, like, it's got to be a big headache for a guy like Scott Coker. But Liz Carmouche keeps chugging along, man. Look at her record. It's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And she's 38 years old, but man, she's done a lot in the sport. She's competed for the UFC at 125 and 135. She was a two-time title challenger. If you'll recall, she lost to Ronda Rousey in the first ever fight in the UFC's women's division, I guess. And then she lost to Valentina Shevchenko, which, by the way, she's 1-1 against, so no shame in that. But she is the Bellator champ, and now she's got two title defenses. We said a lot about her pre-fight, so I won't go too far into it. But I got a lot of respect for Liz, man. She's really, really – she won't ever make a Mount Rushmore, but you can definitely say in women's MMA, I think she'll be a Hall of Famer one day.
She's a second-round pioneer of that sport for them. You know, you have the Gina Carano's of the world that kind of laid that foundation, but she's one of the girls that kind of kept it going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because she was around back then. So for sure, Gina's been out of the game for over a decade. Liz kept chugging through, man. Congratulations to Liz Carmouche. She really, really had a rough go of it on Friday night. What'd you think of Tim Johnson? Tim Johnson, he just won't go away. You know, he was in the UFC, and I think he exited 3-2, 3-3. He wasn't a tomato can. Comes over to MMA, Bellator, excuse me. But it seems like he's just that veteran that's supposed to put other guys over, and that's not happening. You know, like, yes, he hasn't become world champion, but he's always kind of up there in the mix. Lately, Daniel James has gotten a push. Linton Vassell, obviously, is probably next for Ryan Bader. But old Timothy Johnson won't go away.
Yeah, and that was a close fight. That was an interesting scrap with those two. And I don't remember a fight where two fighters have been more friendly than those two guys. But yeah, Tim Johnson just doesn't kind of go away. He's always in every fight. But he's getting older. You know, how long are you going to depend on that type of fight to get through? He needs one of those where he just comes out and levels somebody.
Which is what he did to Fortune and Mitrione back-to-back, and then he won that split decision over Chuck Congo. Then he lost three in a row, so it's good for him to get back in the win column. But I saw this fight more as a fight where, you know, he was kind of that veteran trying to put over a younger guy, and I'm not trying to say Saeed Soma is the future, nothing like that. I'm just saying, because if I'm not mistaken, I think he may have taken the fight on a later notice too. But yeah, they were very friendly towards each other, and that's that. But congrats to Tim Johnson, who just keeps banking checks. And then what'd you think of Sarah McMahon over Arlene Blanco? You know, Blanco's a tough gal, man, with really, really good hands. But she just could not get going because Sarah made her pay with the wrestling.
Yeah, that one was fun because you felt like Blanco was in the fight all the way up until the end. And she kind of did show that when she staggered McMahon. But McMahon did a really good job of just, you know, I thought her going up in weight was going to be a little bit of an issue. And I'm not saying it won't be in the future. But Sarah did a great job of just blending a little bit of that striking and then some of her wrestling. Her shots were just perfectly timed. And Blanco, I don't know why there's sometimes where I feel like she could fight off a takedown a little bit more, you know, but she just chooses to go on her back and get in her guard. And when she's there, you just kind of know she's not getting up. And that's been a little bit of an issue. But boy, does she crack, man. She can crack and she can take a punch.
Yeah, no doubt about that, man. I'm a fan of both of them, Blanco and McMahon. Yes, they do need to sort out what's the future there for Chris Cyborg so they can get the division going. Because, you know, McMahon and Kat Zingano, who we got to know as bantamweights in the UFC, bantamweight title contenders, title challenges, I should say. Now they're fighting at 145, and you might as well maximize these names. You know, one thing that Bellator does get accused of is sometimes they grab veterans a little later in their stages, you know, like a Yoel Romero or whoever. And, you know, you got to turn this around. They don't have 40 shows a year. Every year counts because the way I see it, you're not gaining on the UFC. You're, as a number two organization, I don't see the gains towards the UFC. If anything, the UFC's probably lengthened the lead. Sometimes we worry that PFL might be gaining on you. And right. Figure it out. If you know, that's what Dana White does. If he can't come to terms with someone, he creates the interim belt. And either that buys them time or it puts pressure on the champion to figure out what's going to happen. Or if you are going to figure it out, then you either know by now that she needs to put pen to paper and let's get this thing going. Because, again, Zingano and McMahon aren't spring chickens either.
Right. I think she's 42 now, Sarah McMahon.
Correct. Yeah, she's 42, man. All right, moving on here. I think we pretty much caught the main part of the Bellator 241 card. We'll just go back to Bellator, and then we'll go to the UFC. Bellator 295 took place on Saturday. And here are some names. I'll throw them out real quick of young ladies and men that got wins. Before we get to the big stuff, Bruna Ellen defeated Ilara Joanne. Bruna's been ranked before. That's the only reason I'm mentioning her, but nothing too much there. Sumiko Inaga defeated Vita Arteaga, who also used to be ranked back in the day. Kai Kamaka's a guy that we've seen a lot at the gym. He got a win over Adley Edwards, Mads Brunell. You've seen him in the UFC. He defeated Justin Gonzalez. Aaron Pico put on a clinic, man, against Jane Gonzalez. James Gonzalez stepped up on 1 week's notice. But, man, Pico looked good. He really knows how to throw punches to the body. That shoulder is as good as he advertised it, too. Yancy Medeiros beat Charlie Leary. And like Go said, look for that piece on Junkie done by Matt Erickson and Nolan King, where they followed Yancy Medeiros, and it's a nice, good behind-the-scenes documentary on Yancy Medeiros, who really, really comes off well on screen. I think you guys will like it. It's about 20 minutes long, but it goes by quick. Ilima Lay McFarlane defeated Kana Watanabe, and Patchy Mix defeated Rafion Stotts to become the new Bellator Bantamweight Grand Prix champion. He's also the new Bellator interim Bantamweight champion. And he's also a millionaire. He also has next versus the winner of Sergio Pettis, the undisputed champion, who did not participate in the tournament because of a knee injury. Except he's already got his dance card filled. He's fighting Patricio Pitbull Frady, former lightweight champion, current featherweight champion, and now looking to become their first three-division champion over at Bellator. He's challenging Pettis. So Mix will get the winner of that. We'll start at the top. Goes, what do you think of Mix over Stotts? Quick work, but it was a beautiful KO knee to the head.
Yeah, I mean, as a fan, you want to see that fight go a little longer than it actually did. But it was perfect timing. And, you know, like Patchy mentioned, a lot of people just look at him as a submission guy. And if for those of you who don't know this, but these guys have trained together before in the past. You know, they're both at Extreme Couture, but they had to split up for this fight. But they're using coaches that are familiar with each other's skill sets, right? So it's not like Rafion Stotts all of a sudden is finding out that Patchy Mix has some striking. He's probably seen that. And the coaches on the other side probably know that as well. He just got caught. That's really what it comes down to. It was a perfectly timed strike. It hit him flush in the jaw, and that's that. And if you look at what Patchy Mix was able to do, that's a big victory. And then the row there was pretty impressive. So, I mean, this dude made a mark. He made $1 million. And now he's going to possibly unify the titles here soon. So this couldn't be a better outcome for that guy. And for Rafion Stotts, it's kind of disappointing because I think he's a talented fighter. But at the end of the day, we just kind of put him off to the side the same way we did with Danny Sabatello, right? That was a big name who, by the way, gets a victory here. But now we're talking about other dogs, right? We're talking about Pitbull, and we're talking about Sergio Pettis. And now you got Patchy Mix in the mix, no pun intended. So, yeah, it sucks for Rafion Stotts. He's got to come back and make a name for himself again. But you can't take anything away from Patchy Mix. It was just a perfectly timed strike.
These are some different names. These are some decent names that he has as W's. Ricky Vandejas, James Gallagher, Kyoji Horiguchi, Magomed Magomedov, and now Rafion Stotts. All big wins for Patchy Mix. He has every right to say, especially because that tournament was formidable, to say, in my opinion, I'm the best bantamweight champion. You don't have to agree, and neither do we, but he has every right to say that because that's a really, really good lineup that he went through. It's a respectable lineup that he went through. Now, what we can do is unpack it and see, is he right? I don't know. And like Goz mentioned, he's trained with Stotts. Guess who else he's trained with? Merab Dvalishvili and Aljamain Sterling. Those guys are in the same room at Extreme Couture when the guys from the East are out here in the West. They have a home here out in Las Vegas, so they're out here quite a bit. I'm not saying Mix can beat them. I'm just saying that on any given night, Mix could beat pretty much anyone in the world. But remember, in the UFC is a little bit different. Although what Mix did, again, winning that Grand Prix, respect. In the UFC, though, it's different. You have to go through a gauntlet of top fighters. So not just your Stott, Magomedov, and Horiguchi, but about three other names before you even get a whiff at the champ. And then when you do, you know, it's on and staying there. Good luck as well. That's the part where I think people doubt. Some people who I think, I just call them casual fans, will just say, nah, man, UFC fighters don't lose to Bellator fighters. You're wrong. They do. But I'd love to see Mix in the UFC. I just, you know, it's not going to happen anytime soon, but I think he could hang, you know?
Yeah, and that's another thing where with Bellator, you know, how many times is there going to be a Pitbull brother in a main event? We've been talking about how they kind of need to replenish some of these stars. For a while, they were losing some to the UFC, and this is kind of the way to do it. You know, you look at these guys like Apache Mix, and then you look at a guy like Aaron Pico, who should probably be taking that next step soon. There's quite a few of these guys that are now making Bellator a little bit stronger and making us want to watch them even more.
For sure. And it's each time somebody wins a Grand Prix, either Scott Coker, someone in the media, the fighter themselves, they're making their claim that they have, that they're the number one fighter in that respected division. Am I saying it right? Yeah. Respective division. The most recent was Johnny Eblen. Johnny Eblen didn't win a Grand Prix per se, but he's undefeated, and he beat Gegard Mousasi. MMA math, connected dots, whatever you want to call it. Mousasi was a formidable middleweight for many years. Hell, that guy's fought at heavyweight and light heavyweight, so he's a moneyweight fighter. Former Strikeforce, light heavyweight champ, former Dream or one of those. Sengoku, I can't remember. He was, I believe, a middleweight champion there. That dude's a G, right? And so Bellator, he was a middleweight champ. And Evelyn ran through him. Now, was that prime Mousasi? I could hear that. I could hear that maybe Mousasi's a little bit older now. But still, Evelyn blew through him. And so that's Evelyn's kind of claim to fame. And then Yaroslav Amosov, their welterweight champ, he's like 27-0. He seems to be pretty unstoppable too. He's probably thinking, I could take down Leon Edwards and make him pay. And dude, not too many people are thinking that that couldn't happen. And goes, remember when AJ McKee won the featherweight Grand Prix title? He was ranked number one at USA Today Sports. Volkanovski had yet to really become what he became. So, you know, Bellator's their top guys are kind of like flexing for him. It's the whole organization versus organization where I'm saying that they're not a clear, they're not pushing the UFC, you know, like for that top spot. That's what I'm talking about. But they got some good dogs at the top over there at Bellator.
They do. They just need to, they need to be active, and they got to keep them going in that rotation.
Yeah, it is fun that Pitbull's doing that thing, you know, trying to become a three-time champ. That's pretty historical. There's some stuff that Bellator's doing. They got into France first, if I'm not mistaken. They've been to Hawaii where the UFC hasn't been. They've done one-night tournaments. They've done, you know, they've done a few things that the UFC hasn't done. They have the productions and the stuff that they do with the military and the ramps, and they still got sponsors if you're all into that shit. Whatever, man. It's pretty cool. You know, the Grand Prix again, I love it, but I want to see, I guess, more, but quality. Not so I'm not saying 40 shows, but I think I need a few more shows. And just whatever talent you're using in Europe or these other shows that no one cares about, go to arenas here in the United States and just stack your shows and do what you're doing. Like, I like what they're doing with, what is it? Pitbull versus Pettis. And if I'm not mistaken, that one is Bader versus, no, hold on. I might as well just look it up. I'm being lazy here. The show that they have in Chicago, I know it's got Corey Anderson. I think he's on it as well. But that one is really, really money, man. I really, really like that one. How can I look that one up? We're going to go with Sergio Pettis in Tapology. I just might as well, because I know they have a nice 1-2-3 punch, and that's what I want to see more from Bellator. You do that, I plant my seat on the couch, and I watch your whole damn card. You know what I mean? But it's Bellator 297 on June 16th. Look at this. Nemkov versus Romero. Romero, yes, he's older, but Romero's fun. Nemkov's a beast. Pettis versus Pitbull, two title fights. And then they did, that's right, Phil Davis versus Corey Anderson. Daniel James, he's turning it around. He's from Chicago. He's going to be on the card as well. So that's what I want to see more of. Daniel James just fought. He's in. Pitbull's doing something historical. He's in. You know what I mean? You signed Romero. All right. Throw him in there as well. Let's go.
Yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm. All right. They'll probably kill us if we don't move over to the UFC. So any final thoughts on Bellator 295 or whatever just took place on Saturday?
I mean, overall, I just think they going to Hawaii, what it stands for, you know, what they do with first responders, the troops, all that stuff, and the fights, I thought they put on a good show. Like, I think if you went to both of them, you probably had a good time.
You're right, though. We did miss out something by that fight ending so quick. I mean, it was definitive, yeah, and it was a beautiful knee. But, man, I wanted to see that more like in the fourth or fifth round and let these guys go out there and do their thing. My heart was broken. I really like Raphael's thoughts. I think he's way better than just getting finished so early in that fight. And as far as Alima Leigh McFarland, they're trying to say maybe her versus Liz. They're training partners. They're friends. But for a title, I'm sure they'll put that to the side and get down. And remember, Alima Leigh, after she lost to Juliana Velasquez, she was thinking of just kind of hanging it up and kind of cruise controlling it a little bit. And now all of a sudden she's back to being a contender. We're happy for Yancy Medeiros, Aaron Pico. Good stuff from him. Kai Kamaka wins. So, yeah.
Elimelech's victory was pretty narrow as well, though. So, you know, it's if you're going to do it, now's the time.
They just don't have much death, really. As far as Pico wanting a title shot, there's Jeremy Kennedy saying, well, I kind of beat you because you hurt your shoulder in that fight. But, you know, stuff was going down before it. McKee went up to 55. He's in the 55 tournament. So I like that Pico's making a run. Remember, we thought for a second there that Pico may run into AJ at some point, and with their little stance of not fighting each other, that might hurt him. But AJ moving up, this is the perfect time for Pico to make his move. But it all depends on what they're going to do with Borix and Kennedy.
Yeah, he wants to do that for an interim, him and Jeremy Kennedy.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
I could live with that.
Yeah, it's not the worst idea.
Yeah. All right. Sergey Pavlovich, what is your thoughts on this guy? He is just a destructive first round KO machine. But I'll tell you what, Curtis Blaydes, you know, when he won his last one, Sergey, I think it was over Tai Tuivasa. I remember thinking, well, you still got a few guys that are, for one, I think Francis was still around. Two, Miocic is wrestler with hands. Blaydes is a monster who can wrestle. You know, I felt like there was still some tough tasks ahead of him. You know, has Pavlovich been working on his takedown defense, his ability to get up? What would happen if he gets put on his back? But no one does it, Ghost. People just go out there and throw hands with this guy. This guy's got great hands. And he lit up Curtis Blaydes.
Dude, it's an interesting situation that this cat left us with, because in a way, and doesn't he kind of remind you, like, not strike for strike, but Fedor Emelianenko, in the sense that he has that kind of like Fedor charm. He fights similar, where he makes every shot matter, and when he gets hit, he just doesn't give a shit. Like, it's the weirdest thing. Because Curtis Blaydes is a big dude, man. He's not known for his striking, but he's got decent hands, and he did connect. But Pavlovich just didn't care, and he just waited for his shots, and they were so pinpoint. What he did, George, was amazing, but I think that the lasting effect that he had is I'm more interested in seeing him fight John Jones than I am Stipe Miocic.
Me too. Ever since he lost to Overeem, and that was his debut in the UFC, by the way. He came over to the UFC as 12-0. Everybody said, well, that's in Russia. You probably stacked up a bunch of tomato cans, and let's see what you got here. And Overeem kicked his ass. Oh, I think that was Overeem's last fight in the UFC. This was back in 2018, so about 5 years ago. Since then, he's won six straight. All of them in the first round. All of them finishes. Marcelo Gomes, Maurice Green, Shamil Abdur-Akimov, Derek Lewis, Tai Tuivasa, Curtis Blaydes. Impressive as hell. Now, Tuivasa and Lewis were about the point where we were saying, these are the tougher tests, but those guys like to stand and bang. Blaydes was supposed to be the test on the ground, you know, because we're still wondering. If him and Jones just want to throw hands, Pavlovich is a live dog. Right. But Jones obviously showed us, I still got some wrestling, and when I want to use it, I will, because that's what he did against Ciryl Gane. And that's why it's really hard to forecast how a Pavlovich-Jones fight would go.
But here's the thing. Let's just say he wants to use that wrestling. Curtis Blaydes did attempt takedowns. He did try. On one of those, he kind of got in perfect timing deep. Sergey was just not having any of it.
I got to rewatch it, because I was in luck with the impression that Blaydes did much in attempting to get the fight to the ground. But so much was happening between looking this way, looking that way, looking this way, looking that way, that I might have missed that. What I did see was Curtis Blaydes land two nice right hands. One was a counter and one was a lead. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, shit, you know, way to let this guy know, hey. And we said that. We said Blaydes has obviously improved his striking. way to let this guy know that you have something and you're not just going to resort to wrestling. But we were prepared to then see the wrestling because he had already heard him put something in this guy's head. And it was too late. Before he got to it, Pavlovich put him out.
Right. But I mean, the lasting effect, dude, like, I don't know. I'm so excited to see this guy again. And that's the thing, is it might be a while before we see him, depending on what happens.
So they're saying Miocic versus Jones in November. Holy cow, man. We're in fucking
a long time.
We're in April, and I can't believe they said it so casually. You know, Miocic is 40. He'll be 41 by the time he fights. I like Miocic. It's not like I dislike him. He just hasn't fought much in the last few years. I'll give you an example. He won the title in 2016. That year alone, he fought three times. Arlovski, Radum, Overeem. In fact, I was pushing for this guy to be fighter of the year that year because he had defeated Arlovski in Las Vegas to start the year, a former champ. He went to that stadium show in Curitiba, Brazil, and knocked out the champ in his hometown. And then he defended in his hometown of Cleveland, Ohio, against Overeem, a former K-1 World Max champ and a former Strikeforce heavyweight champ. So that was pretty legit. Then in 2017, he fought once. He avenged the loss against Junior Dos Santos. Okay, after a busy 2016, I could see one fight in 2017. It was in May. Okay, cool. Sure enough, in early 2018, the fight against Francis Ngannou. That's the one where Ngannou gassed. Miocic was probably going to beat him anyway. I think Ngannou just wasn't what he would become, right? Then he loses later on that year to Daniel Cormier in 2018. In 2019, 2020, and 2021, he fought one time. In 2022, he didn't fight. We're now in 2023, and he wants to fight at the end of 2023? I mean, that's 2.5 years. What? Why? Like, we get it. You are probably the greatest heavyweight of all time. It's either you or Fedor. But the last time we saw you, you got thumped by Ngannou. His last win is August 2020. You got a hot Russian right now who's just decapitating people. And Jones, he hasn't fought in 3 years. You know, this division's kind of like, let's start repairing it after what happened with Francis Ngannou, who also hadn't been fighting as much, and he had the injury and then the contract thing. Hey, man, let's get something going. They're already filling the dance card for July. We haven't heard anything about August. Why can't these guys fight in August? Both guys won quick, Jones and Pavlovich, or September. And then if we can double dip and something happens in November or December, cool. We'll take it. But, you know, like it boggles my mind because if they don't fight till November, what's Pavlovich going to wait till next March? We're in April. That's almost a whole year.
I wasn't against Stipe Miocic. I think that's the guy that deserved the shot. However, this situation here, I think it just trumps that. You know, if you look at, you know, this is probably something we're going to talk about tomorrow on Spinning Backlick. Make sure you guys tune in. If you are sitting here listening to this show, you're going to love Spinning Backlick, all right? So definitely tune into that. It's on our YouTube page. But, George, if you look at Stipe Miocic's record, do you know there's only one guy on his record that's currently fighting in the UFC? Andrei Arlovski. That's it. Everybody's either gone or retired. All right? Wow. I mean, that's not asking for a title shot. That's not something you look at and you go, we need to give it to this guy, right? Everybody is either gone or retired. If you look at Pavlovich and his stats, he can tell you right here, right now, this is who I am. This is what I'm all about. This is what I'm bringing to the table. If you look at Stipe Miocic, boy, are there a lot of question marks. All we're falling back on is the fact that at one time he was great, right? That's all we're falling back on because we haven't seen him in a long time. And like I said, if you look at everybody that he's been through, there's just none of them are really around anymore.
Yeah. And his last effort was him getting waxed by Francis. So, and the weird thing about it, you know what pisses me off the most is why do they think they have, like, I'm set for life money? How many times do I have to go through this? You don't have that yet. I don't know if you ever will. I mean, unless you're a fucking really, really big time penny pincher, You have some abilities right now in a sport that's popping for an organization worth a lot of money. Go get yours. Yes, I know a training camp's tough. Yes, I know it comes with brain trauma. But hello, you are one of the better ones. You're usually the one giving the brain trauma out, if anything. So make it worth, you know, that sacrifice. Respect to you for being a firefighter, and you're doing it full time again, and that's where you'll get your pension and all that, because the UFC doesn't offer that. I hear you. But, you know, he never once said, yeah, man, you know, I this sport's too much. I need to get out. He never once said that. He just, for some reason, can't get. I think there's been a few injuries here and there. And if they've been serious enough that he needed to retire, then he should have retired, but he didn't. So it leads me to believe he still wants to fight. But all last year, they kept saying, I can be ready in September. Well, I want to go in August. Well, this guy said October. This, that. Okay, now we're out of 2022. Now we're into 2023. Jones says, International Fight Week, I can be ready to go. Yeah, all right, fuck, you know, let's do it. International Fight Week, 1 year later. Now it's all the way to November. Sorry, I'm not interested. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to tell you. I'm not a disrespectful person. I'm a fan. I like to cover the sport. But Jones versus Stephen Miocic does not interest me in November. Pavlovich versus Jones interests me in August or September. I don't want to disrupt what's happening in July. That's Brandon Moreno and Alexander Pantoja, Volkanovski versus Jair. Good. I'm happy with that card. Let's start talking about August and September and figure it out. If they told me Jones versus Pavlovich in November, I still think that's too far away, personally, but that's just me. I think they got themselves a great matchup there, and I wish both guys would just, you know, I wish they would get that done. Mm-hmm. I'm even mad about Israel Adesanya, who, by the way, could use time off. He's a frequent fighter. Respect to him. Great performance coming off that win over Pajeda. But when they signed Whitaker versus DDP, I was like, what? I thought Izzy wanted to fight soon. You got heat with the other guy from the African continent, South Africa versus Nigeria. Let's do it. That maybe the show's not ready for Africa. Maybe Africa's not ready for it yet. But still, having two Africans fight, you're putting a big risk putting him in there against Whitaker. Whitaker beats him. That's it. You know, I guess, I don't know, Dricus du Plessis can dust himself off and do it again and build it up again. Right now, he's hot, though. That's a hot matchup. You know what I mean? And all for what? To see Whitaker versus Izzy for the third time? A guy that was born in New Zealand, Whitaker, who now identifies more as Australian, versus a guy that was born in Nigeria, who now identifies as living in New Zealand. Both, like, this is an Oceania battle, but really, like, over here, I think you have way more of a story, you know, two born fighters in Africa where you're trying to penetrate. This is the fight to do it in.
Yeah, I mean, that just doesn't make much sense to me. I don't know why they would put themselves in that hole. You're essentially, if you're willing to have Robert Whittaker fight him a third time, then at that point, why not just separate them and let fate kind of decide it? But strike with du Plessis now, there's a storyline behind it. Israel Adesanya is so good that just having a guy that has a formidable skill set is not enough to get us excited, because he mops the floor with everyone. You got to add a little bit of a heat. Like with Pereira, that fight, you know, you go back at the first fight in MMA, you have the storyline of what happened with kickboxing. Okay, cool. That's what kind of got us motivated. But here, I mean, man, you put Robert Whittaker in front of him for a third time. Like, what is that countdown show going to even sound like? What the hell could Robert Whittaker say in that that's going to make us go, you know what? I think he's got him this time. Like, there's really not much there. This storyline can get us more excited. And on top of that, you could still make the Whittaker fight if you're that desperate to do it later in the future, because Robert Whittaker's that good that he runs through just about everyone else.
Yeah, and Dricus du Plessis is doing all the heavy lifting. He's the one talking shit. Izzy can actually show up and go, eh, all right, I'll be the baby face. You're the heel. Let's go. Let's roll. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I know I segue there because we were talking about the UFC fight card and Pavlovich versus Curtis Blaydes, but it just got me thinking of these delays, I guess. You know, they can turn around and have a flyweight title fight in 3 weeks, 3 years ago, and then fucking drill it down our throats. Those two guys, four times in a row. Well, at least in the case of Ferguson, because Kai Kara-France fought Moreno, you know, in between there on one of them. But they can drill that one to death. But, you know, these other ones, oh, yeah, not till November, man. Coming on. Heavyweights, come on. Your heavyweight division has been in shambles for so long. Then you have proper champions. And then, again, somehow just, you know, it gets screwed up. And with the UFC's FU attitude where they can just put together interim title fights and they got some bodies going, do it. That's all mm-hmm. I'm saying. Do it. I think Pablo, like you said, it goes, he's charming. He's got a good personality. If he can learn a little bit of English, I think he'll be, you know, a good player for the UFC. I just don't see it. I don't see why they don't see it. Continuing on with that fight card, they also had Bruno Silva dispatching good friend of the show, Brad Tavares. Oh boy, what can I say about this? I got to keep it real. We've known Tavares for such a long time, but Tavares, this loss hurts because when you start dropping a few in a row later in your career, you know, lots of things can happen, man. I think he's had 22 fights in the UFC, 14-8, which is respectable. Bruno Silva said very kind things about Brad Tavares, but, you know, that Brad Tavares got finished here in this one. I will say I wish Brad would have exposed – he's more of a veteran than Bruno Silva, and I wish he would have exposed Bruno Silva's lack of ground game at some point, almost like Blades, you know, doing that to Pavlovich. He just never got around to it because he got in a firefight. And Bruno Silva was a good striker. So in this instance, I thought Brad could have had better fighter IQ in that fight. He struck for a while, but at some point threatened it. Why do you go to wrestling every Wednesday? You know what I mean? Like, why do you guys do that? Look at Francis Ngannou. He's more for his hands. He's known for his hands. We want him to throw those uppercuts and send people to the move. But guess what? Not only won him his title, that back take that he had against Miocic was impressive, but also against Gon, he defended his title. Sometimes you just got to resort to it, man, to win your fights.
Yeah, that fight just never really got going for Brad. But it's tough. It's the situation he's in now. You know, the UFC kind of has a decision to make. And I'll keep it real. If they decide to let him go, it might not be the worst thing in the world for him. You know, the places that you can land now, PFL, all of a sudden you're fighting for $1 million. And guess what? You have a win over a guy who's won that before. And on top of that, if you don't want to go that direction, you want to go to Bellator, well, now you can have your lifelong dream come true, you know, fighting for a more major organization in Hawaii. I'm sure that would be attractive to him. So all is not lost, but it definitely was a rough loss for him.
The Duplessis fight, he could have won. They were 1-1 going into round three, but he was fresher. Then I remember he did
should have won that one.
His nose got messed up, but I still thought that was a winnable fight. And then this one I thought he could have won because he's the more well-rounded fighter than Bruno Silva.
And it would have given him more life in the division on his contract.
Hell yeah. And Drukas Duplessis is the last guy, right? Drukas Duplessis is the one we're talking about that could be fighting Israel Adesanya. So Tavares is like getting these whiffs of being, you know, closer to being a title contender. He's nowhere near it. I'm not saying that. But he had won two in a row after losing to Israel Adesanya and who was the other guy? Edmund Shabazian. He beat ACJ Two-Face, the guy that you referenced as the PFL guy that won $1 million, and then Omari Akhmadov. And then the Drukas Duplessis would have been three in a row. So, you know, this is a division where sometimes you can sneak in the back door and maybe get to a title shot, or just bigger paydays and bigger contracts. That's what I want for Brad. He's a really, really good guy, and he's come up so close. But in this fight, like I said, once Silva got going, I wish Tavares would have ducked under and tried to wrestle, you know, instead of staying in that firefight.
Yeah, I agree.
Continuing on here, Bruno Silva, by the way, shakes off, I think, a 2 or 3 fight losing streak. He's back in the win column. Bobby Green and Jared Gordon ended. Clash of heads, no contest. It's unfortunate, but look, it looked like Green, if you want to give him the benefit of the doubt, was either leading with an awkward hammer fist or lead elbow, except his head was so far thrown in the form of what looked to be a headbutt almost, that there was a lot of people thinking he could just get flat out disqualified. Forget about the no contest. He was very pissed, not at the time inside the octagon after the decision was read, but later on, apparently he had a little bit of a meltdown, breakdown, whatever you want to call it, because he felt like he won the fight, you know? Mm-hmm. Now, Bobby Green, to me, doesn't have a history of being a dirty fighter. Yeah, he kicked Dan Lazon 3 times in the nuts one time, but, you know, that was in 2007, if I'm not mistaken. He always seems to be a stand-up guy, a fun guy to watch, so I don't believe that that was an intentional headbutt at all. But my point is, that's the way it came off. I don't blame the refs one bit. That led to the sequence, you know what I mean, that ended the fight. And so that should have been a no contest. I agree with them and just disagree with Bobby respectfully.
Yeah, it was the right call. But for sure, it wasn't intentional. Like, you could see what he was trying to do. You just can't do that. You can't put your head like that. But the technique was there. He was coming forward with that elbow, but you can't put your head in that situation. And it was just unfortunate the way that ended.
He wanted that 60K. That's why he brought the 60K, man. That's what he wanted for. I guess he's a 60 and 60 fighter, or somehow it was tied in that way. But, you know, it's just a little bit of a bad run he has after losing to Makhachev. Andrew Dover, this was definitely a winnable fight for him against Jared Gordon. He'll have to reset and regroup. As for Jared Gordon, well, you know, he's still got that fight waiting in the wings against Paddy Pimblett, who, by the way, during the week said, I may not even fight in all 2023, so we'll see what happens there. He's always got that to hang back on. I would say if that fight does seem like a possibility, wait for that fight, take some time off, because that was a pretty brutal clash of heads. And a couple mm-hmm. follow-ups there at the end. Yasmin Lucindo defeated Rogan Walker. Jeremiah Wells defeated Matthew Schmellensberger. Christoph Giagos defeated Rick Glenn. Montel Jackson defeated Hani Yahya. Norma Dumont defeated Carol Rosa. Mohamed Usman defeated Junior Tafa. Not Justin Tafa, Junior Tafa. William Gomez defeated Francis Marshall. Brady Heastead defeated Dana Batjarel. The bonuses went to performance of the night, Pavlovich 50K, Silva 50K, Giagos 50K, Jackson 50K. No fight of the night. Thoughts?
I thought that was interesting. You know, one thing that I will say was, if we can go back just a little bit on some of the fights that you laid out there. Have you noticed that the UFC in the heavyweight division have had like a few of these guys that, I don't want to call them place fillers, but like that Tafa fight and that Usman fight was pretty fun. You know, I thought it was a pretty decent fight, but when you look at both guys, they look menacing and they look like they could do something pretty big in the division. But they just don't have the whole talent. And like, I feel like some of these guys that the UFC get, it's just not the place to learn on the job. And so if you look at the top and then you look at some of them, if you do this in the lightweight division, the bantamweight division, the featherweight division, there's just such a big drop off sometimes with some of these fighters. And I felt like we had too many fights where we were looking at fighters that just don't look like one day they're going to turn into something. You know, there's not like the feeling that you get when you watch an Aaron Pico or someone like that, right? when you watch an Adrian Yanez, where you go, hey, this guy could actually do something. They have a lot of these fights that you're watching and you're kind of like, what am I doing here? Like, this just doesn't seem like high level MMA.
I would agree there. Pavlovich and Blades are ranked. Tavares was for a while. He's no longer ranked. I don't think we're going to rank Bruno Silva coming off this week. And other than that, I got to scroll for a while. Hani Yahya was ranked about 5, maybe even 10 years ago. That guy's been around. Norma Dumont and Carol Rosa have been ranked or will be ranked or whatever. But that's because 145 doesn't have a lot of fighters. But yeah, there's not a – I usually go by ranked fighters. Not a lot of ranked fighters fight on fight nights. I still enjoy it because of the gambling aspect. Like I say, you can have 2-14 Cincinnati Bengals at 3-13 Cleveland Browns. But if you have a line, all of a sudden people are cheering. Total and spread, you know? Mm-hmm. That's what makes football so popular. But yeah, in reality, most of the time we don't care. It's just that gambling can make it fun, fantasy fighting, fantasy football, whatever it is, maybe the case. And the UFC is special in that it's the UFC and there's people that attend it. There's people that are watching it and tweeting about it. And so it is a fun atmosphere to be a part of, whether you're at home or in person. But at the end of the day, goes, you're right. Sometimes you feel like you're watching fighters that are just going to bang for our pleasure, but not necessarily lead towards a title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a weird situation.
Mm-hmm. And you know, one thing I've thought, and this is way off the beaten path, I wonder if Reebok or Venom gets the list of who their fighters are, and they're like, man, we got to do a fucking kit for this guy and this gal. Oh my God, we got to get the name right and the flag and the colors, get them their sizes, make sure we have enough. These guys could be like 0-2. And I just wonder if sometimes they just go, holy cow. I wonder if Venom just says, we honestly only really want to sell McGregor, Diaz when he was there, Masvidal before he retired. Jones, like the bread and butter has to be that. Reebok and Venom have to have a bread and butter of a core of 20 fighters, maybe. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's as big as 50. But no, instead they got to make 700 or 800 of these fucking kits. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Put yourself.
Do they make money?
I don't think so. Because put yourself in the shoes of somebody maybe at the end of high school or college. If you got that dough, aren't you out there buying a LeBron James jersey or something like before you even get to, like, where the fuck are you going to wear a Venom fight kit? Like, I just don't see them around town. Like, I see them at events, but I never walk at the mall and see somebody doing that. I see people with jerseys on.
I'm looking at their website. It's not they have uncool stuff. I just don't know that many people want to wear it. And like you said, Gil, there's so much apparel out there, you know, that I think people would rather spend their money on. I think they identify more with a certain fighter. So mm-hmm. I wonder if they would ever say it publicly. Yeah, this thing's paying off, man. This is fucking awesome. To me, it looked like Reebok jumped out of a plane when the UFC said, we'll let you out. If you want, you got to jump out of the plane. And Reebok looked at each other and said, you know, we ain't got parachutes, but I think we can land in the water and we'll be all right. We'll just roll the dice here. I don't know. There's some parts of MMA that work perfectly, and then there's some parts that just seem to not work. Yeah. This is one of those, these kit things that just doesn't seem to work. I mean, why is it that Manchester United can't just use the same jersey for 5 years? Nope. Every year, three new ones. The home, away, the third kit, and all of us fucking buy them. Different colors and everything. It works for some sports, but it doesn't work for other sports. Even when you buy an NFL jersey, you're like, oh my God, is he signed for the next 4 years? All right, cool. He just signed a contract. Maybe I'll get the jersey. Because otherwise, you're just wearing someone who's now playing for another team.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, it wasn't the sexiest card. This weekend, they come back, the UFC, with Song Yadong and Ricky Simone. which I believe was supposed to be on the card last week, but it got shifted around. Kyle Borrallo versus Mikhail Oleshchenyk. Adolfo Rivera versus Vieira versus Cody Brundage. Emily Ducate versus Pollyanna Viana. Marcos Rogerio de Lima versus Waldo Cortez Acosta. Joshua Quinlan versus Ange Lusa. Julian Erosa's back. Cody Durden's back. Stephanie Egger's back. Brian Kelleher. It's main event heavy, isn't it?
Big time.
Kyle Borrallo's pretty cool. They are throwing so many fighters at us that sometimes it's hard to remember who the fuck is who anyway. Like, before I even disparage them and say, I'm not into them, I don't remember them, there's just so much. But the UFC somehow is worth $13 billion. So I don't even think they care about our feedback. They're just making money hand over fist. So it's working out for them. I don't think they care if we remember them or not. The good thing is the following week is UFC 288, Sterling versus Cejudo. That's going to be great. Those and I are going to be doing a watch along for that. Sterling versus Cejudo, Bilal Muhammad versus Gilbert Burns, Jessica Andrade versus Jan Jonan, Mozar Evloev versus Bryce Mitchell, Cron Gracie versus Charles Jourdain. That is your main card for the pay-per-view. Bilal Muhammad, Gilbert Burns got signed during the week, but I think we may have already touched on this on Thursday show, right?
I think
so. Has that happened yet?
I don't know. Yeah, I think we did touch on it. If not, we're definitely going to be touching on it a lot here.
We'll touch it on Spinning Backlick. Tune in every Monday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, Spinning Backlick. We're going to be talking about some of these fights that got booked, a lot of them, like the Whitaker, Dricus du Plessis fight, this one, Bilal Muhammad versus Gilbert Burns. It's 5 rounds, co-main event. The winner gets the winner of Leon Edwards versus Colby Covington in October in Abu Dhabi. So right away, the winner of this fight fights sometime next March for a title. We're in April. That's 11 months, almost the whole year. How are we supposed to get excited about that, Goose?
I don't know, man. That's just, that's weird.
They're starting to, it's being too much. Okay. So BKFC 40 wasn't as big of a deal as BKFC 41 that's coming up, but they did have a fight card. I don't really recognize too many of the names that they had. I just happened to be watching it kind of on mute, and it was cool. They had pulled me in a couple cards ago, and I had said I'm going to tune in whenever I can, but the big one is coming up this week. It's their pay-per-view, and I'll pay, just like I paid for boxing. We'll talk about that in just a sec. Perry versus Rockhold, Mendes versus Alvarez, Big Ben Rothwell, he's on the fight card as well. He's now got an opponent. It's Josh Copeland. You guys remember him, the Huggy Bear. And Christine Ferreira against Beck Rollins. That should be a good one, too. Can't sleep on that one. It's April 29th. So that is next Saturday. Pay-per-view, $49.99. Pretty pumped up about it. We made a great contact through them that we'll be telling you more about throughout the week. We just haven't crossed T's and dotted I's just yet on that. But we're excited to share that with you. But yeah, we'll definitely be probably maybe even a casual watch along or at least live tweeting. But we'll definitely be doing that. I was tweeting my ass off, girls. Let's finish with this. Ryan Garcia versus Gervonta Davis. I got so excited for this boxing match. And even though the finish was such a letdown, it pulled me back into boxing a little bit. Hell, just the weigh-ins was awesome. Seeing Bernard Hopkins and Mike Tyson and hearing Jimmy Lennon Jr.'s voice. And even though it's a big old deal up on that stage, it's boxing. That's just boxing. You know, we're never going to change that. What did you think of this weekend, Garcia versus Davis, the buildup, and then the eventual fight itself?
I thought the buildup was great. I thought the fight itself was a little bit more tactical than I thought it was going to be.
Was it too tactical?
I think it was. Here's what happened. See, they're both counter punchers, so you kind of expect something like this to happen. But I thought everything that Davis did was brilliant. From the lead up of promoting the fight to the actual fight to what he said afterwards, I just thought everything he did was brilliant. And if you look at Ryan Garcia, he turned into a 23-year-old right in front of us. Like, whatever you were like when you were 23, he became that guy, but in the ring. As soon as he took that first knockdown, I think he just, it was like the cool kid in school when he gets checked for the first time and doesn't know how to react. Like, he just doesn't want to look dumb again. So he just stopped firing punches. It was the strangest thing. And Davis just, he smelled it. He smelled the blood in the water. He knew exactly what was going on. He knew he had him. And it was just a matter of time.
I liked that he got up quickly. And what can I tell you? I like that he got up quickly and that he didn't look shook up. It looked like it hurt him, but he didn't have like blood spilling or he wasn't wobbled. I'm talking about the left hook in round two. But you're right, goes when he got up, it took him a while to shake it off. However, he could have disguised that, and I'll tell you why. Because neither guy was throwing so much that time off, he really could have just used to recover. And even though he was weary of Davis's power, he could have still been stealing rounds so that at the end he puts a little bit of pressure, you know. Every once in a while he'd get going and then Davis would throw something, but neither guy had much output. And Garcia could have got back in this fight and stolen some rounds. When he was letting them go, as long as he could pull back his hands and protect his jaw, he was okay. And when things got a little bit wild, he was sneaking in some forearms there, it looked like, and kind of roughing them up and throwing Davis off his game. But Davis was able to shake that off and compose, whereas Garcia wasn't able to shake off being hurt. And like you said, you're right, he turned into a young fighter. That body shot, who am I to ever, because I've never been in there, to say what I'm about to say, other than I've seen enough fights that I can say what I'm about to say. I thought Garcia, he did get hit. It was clean. It was a big delay. He takes the knee, but he looked okay. Like, how many times have you seen a guy just in pain curled up in the fetal position? Instead, he took his own knee. He's looking up. He's half smiling. He needed to toughen that out, goes, and get up in pain. And by the time another 3-4 seconds happen where Davis comes up, he can either lock him up or cover up, and by then it starts to go away. I mean, there's different lengths of how long that body shot can stay with you, but I've seen enough of them to think that it was going to be over pretty soon. In fact, once he waved it off, he kind of got up and he looked like he was okay. I haven't heard anything about fractured ribs or anything like that, but to me it looked like he could have been tougher in that moment.
Yeah, it was a liver shot, and we see people fold from those all the time. But you have a fighter like Davis who just, he does not have a high output in what he throws, and I'm not even sure Davis knew he hurt him. Right? Like, we didn't see it. We didn't see him hurt. We just saw him kneel and we figured, oh, it must have been a liver shot. So I think
he had got a nice shot in himself on the side of Davis's head.
So if he would have just maybe moved around a little bit and just bought himself some time, like I said, Davis doesn't have that type of output where you go, holy shit, you know, here comes another four punches. Like, I think in one round, he only threw like four punches. So I would have taken my chances. I would have got up and just tried to move around a little bit and stay away from him and recover, because I don't think Davis was really coming at him in that way.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't they say, I think it was De La Hoya went down like that one time too, right? Where it was just a quiet shot to the body. Where
Bernard Hopkins that did Hopkins. That too.
Yeah. And that was like 20 years ago. Like I say, I've seen so many people in between those 20 years recover and do enough, but he didn't. And maybe the moment was too big, or maybe it was just really that little of a punch that I just need to shove in my pie hole. But from the experience of what I've seen in covering both sports, I think a lot of other fighters that I know that I would have covered would have gotten up. That doesn't mean that they come back and win the fight, but they will pass the victory here to at least make it exciting. Now, that said, like you said, goes, Gervonta Davis was brilliant. He was winning the foot battle, always staying outside on the outside foot. And when he throws, he makes it count. I wish he would throw more often, but guess what? The results are there. he's winning fights, and he's winning them at a high level percentage of finishes. You know what I mean? This wasn't like 10 out of 26 or whatever his record was. I think he's pretty much finished them all, with the exception of maybe two or three. This Gervonta Davis guy is pretty incredible, to tell you the truth. He's only 28 years of age. He's won 27 of 29 by KO. That's a high level.
Very, very high.
Yeah. So anyway, do you want to see it again?
No. Part two. No, not for a while. And I think Ryan said he's going to be going up in weight anyway, so I don't think he wants any part of this again.
You think McGregor was right? McGregor was asked about this. He thinks the rehydration, limiting his rehydration, may have affected him.
Maybe, but I mean, at the end of the day, he took a shot right in the mouth, right in the kisser that put him down. It was perfect timing. And then he took a liver shot. Like, it's not like you could say over time, wow, his cardio is just jacked up. Or like, I just think Davis put on a great performance.
Any quick thoughts on the Lakers? Big, big win for them. They clown Memphis. They're up 2-1.
I thought it was scary that they let them get back in the game. And when I say back in the game, you know, they had a comfortable, it was, you know, around 12 to 10 points where things were starting to get scary, but you never want to give anybody that little glimmer of hope. Even though the Lakers won the game, I felt like a little bit of the momentum switched, and I didn't like that feeling.
You know, they go tomorrow. Let's see if they can hold home court and go back to Memphis up 3-1. Vegas Golden Knights, they're now up 2-1, but they're in Winnipeg. But it's amazing that they've now gotten the home ice advantage back. Any thoughts on them? You think they can get that second one, or you think it's 2-2 coming back to Vegas?
I think it's going to be 2-2 coming back to Vegas. They got what you would call kind of an ugly win, but they made it happen, you know, and that's all that counts. So now you just kind of erase it in your mind. They won one in your home. You won one in theirs. And that's important when you go into these series. But I have a feeling this one's going 7.
And last thing, we can't not leave without mentioning Manchester United advances to the FA Cup final. They defeated Brighton and Brighton Cove in penalties. They had to go to the 7th penalty. Neither team was missing. Their 7th kicker finally missed. He didn't get stopped. He actually missed the goal. And then one of our defenders came in, Lindelof, made the goal. They advanced against a hot Manchester City team, but a Manchester City team that's also trying to win the league and win Champions League. And you know how hard it is to stay healthy, stay motivated, stay hot. Recently, Manchester United, earlier this week, dropped out of the Europa League, so they don't have that distraction. They just have the league. And this, and really the league isn't a distraction in the sense where they're trying to win it, but I think everyone that's behind them and chasing them, they seem to have that kind of handled and sorted. So this, I think if they can get healthy, it should be a better game than it may appear on paper, because again, City's been hot as of late.
Yeah, it was just one of those, like, it was a shitty feeling because you want your goalie to stop something or come close, and really it just, they made a mistake before we did, but City's a tough team. And I'm a little different, I think, than you when it comes to some of these tournaments on the side. Like, man, that schedule, like the amount of games that we have to play more than a lot of teams, that can just kind of, it can weigh on you. It creates heavy legs, and it's nice to take home a trophy. But I'm a little relieved sometimes when they are out of some of those, just because I want to make sure we get top four. You know, that's the most important thing. And these league games, you know, you just want to have a good showing. At the end of the day, I think that's what, like, free agents are looking at, where they want to go and all that. And I think they're a very well coached team. I think they're receptive to their coach and the new strategies that he implores. But I think, sometimes when they have these brain fart games, I think it really just comes down to they're fucking worn out, and they have to use so many different lineups that that cohesion starts to go away a little bit.
Yeah. Just give me 30 seconds here real quick. Sean Brady is going to be fighting Jack Della Maddalena at UFC 290. I guess I should mention Beneil Dariush, just in case we didn't touch on it Thursday, is facing
Charles Oliveira
at UFC 289 in Vancouver under the Nunes and Pena trilogy match. We already talked about Whitaker versus DDP. That's happening. We already talked about, I forget what other matchup we mentioned. Wasn't there another one we threw out there? I forget, but Jim Miller's got his 42nd UFC fight. He's booked against Ludwell Klein. Nate Diaz, we'll talk about that on the spinning back click. He got into a street altercation. Catch the spinning back click tomorrow, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. It'll be live just because we got a lot going down here. Chris Daukaus, he's going to meet Khalil Roundtree. That was another one that was booked.
Marvin Vettori.
Who's he got?
He got one. I don't remember. He got Cannonier, I think, right?
Who did he get? I'm looking. Ray Borg, he retired. Holy cow, so much went down. Whitaker versus DDP. Ray Borg and Keone Diggs were cut because they didn't make weight. I already told you guys about Patty Pimlet. I'm looking for Marvin Vettori to see if I can find it here. And I know there was one other one. And I just wanted to leave you guys with that, but it doesn't look like I'm going to find it just in time. But it's all on Junkie. It's on the front page. Oh, Josh Emmett versus Ilia Topuria. That's pretty sick. I like that. Sean Strickland versus Abus Magomedov. Jared Cannonier versus Marvin Vettori. There it is. And here it is. YNI Warrior. Check that out, folks. You really dig it. Nolan King versus, sorry, not versus, and Matt Erickson. They collaborated on that little documentary about the Hawaiian. All right, we're done. Hopefully we covered it all. And again, spinning back like tomorrow, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. We'll see you then. And then after that, later on in the week, on Thursday for our next MMA Junkie Radio show. We really appreciate your support for Junkie Radio. And we'll be talking to you soon. Go out and be a champion.